So I did want to start with just a quick update on from the State House. You just came from the State House.
They're doing an amendment. There was an original meth bill introduced in the Senate that we weren't very as supportive of. Really, it's not what we're looking for. But then there's an amendment that was heard today that is more in line with what I act and what me personally that I believe where we need a prescription for the medication. And so it was interesting today because the first part of the session or the committee meeting was related to those people who really believe that'll have an impact. So when you hear from prosecutors and police chiefs and sheriffs and mayors and others about, here's the problem in our community, we've got to do something, we can't just keep doing the status quo. It was really good to hear the statistics and the data and kind of what's going on in a variety of different counties and cities because it reaffirms what we believe that it's a really serious problem here in Indiana. And, you know, recently we found out we were number one in the nation with meth labs. And so we've got to do something more significant to make it much more difficult for people to access the Sudafed. That's kind of the bottom line. And so it was good today to hear that. I'm hopeful that that amendment will pass. I had to leave before the testimony came on the other side. They'll probably be in there for another hour or so, but hopefully we'll hear something positive, and I think they'll continue to work on this bill.
I assume that's something then that will, you know, trickle down eventually to Terre Haute. What are the action plans then?
Well, really, what it boils down to, depending on what they do in Indianapolis, mm-hmm. obviously, but the kind of the trickle-down effect or the impact then locally would be you would need a prescription for this medication. You would have to go to your doctor. And, you know, and we all understand that that's going to be a bit of a burden on people to have to do that. It's not a terrible burden, but yes, it will be an additional cost possibly because, you know, not every doctor is just going to write a prescription for that just without you seeing them. But they will work with you. We already know that. That'll be the biggest change if this happens. But on the flip side is, people complain that that'll be a burden on them, but right now they're being burdened with the taxes that are involved with treating, the community correction side, the law enforcement side, the judicial side, the prison side, what it's costing to clean up these labs, take the people through the arrest process and the prosecution, and then put them in prison is costing the taxpayers a tremendous amount of money. So we'll see a local impact, fewer people in jail because there'll be fewer people making it, and there'll be a little bit of a shift to a burden on people to have to go see their doctor to get Sudafed.
Continuing with the State House, no new information, at least on the Convention Center, Holman Center update, but you're meeting with county officials because planning still has to keep going.
Right. We continue to work and hone the numbers, look at our potential partners here who can help us from a financial perspective, and then we're kind of waiting on the bill to be assigned to a hearing. And so that we hope that'll happen in the next couple of weeks. But today, meeting with the combined city county council invited to just kind of hear a little bit more detail from the consultant that we've all hired to walk us through, here's what it'll cost to do it, here's the income that'll be generated, here's the impact on the community. And then Dr. Bradley from ISU and myself will both be there to kind of just explain to them the significance and importance to the community to do this project. But it really all boils back to the legislature because without that sales tax component funding, we won't be able to do it. So we're hopeful that we'll get that through the session. Planning will continue. We'll move this thing forward to the next phase once we get through this session.
And I assume for both parties involved, including Indiana State and, of course, the city, this has to be a win-win situation for both. Otherwise, either would not probably be on board with this. How do you make that work?
Yeah, you know, what's tricky about this is in the beginning, people said, well, it sounds like ISU just doesn't want to spend the money to rehabilitate Holman Center. Well, it's not that they don't want to spend it. We were looking at, can we make this something bigger and better than what it is today and find a way to fund it through a state mechanism? And so, this can work because ISU will give up control of Holman Center. It'll become a community asset to be operated. We'll have a variety of revenue sources coming in, and we'll add a whole bunch of convention space on the front that we simply don't have right now that we'll be able to draw people into our community. So it'll be a huge project. It'll be a significant, have a significant impact on the community if we can pull this off, and I'm hopeful that we'll get this state funding component.
And if it does get pulled off, are there enough hotel rooms and amenities of that sort to go along with the bigger convention?
That's a great question. You know, we're close, but it's likely we would need another hotel to support it. You know, those things will come as we move down the road, as we do more fine tuning on that, but probably not quite enough rooms downtown, but we have enough in the community, but you kind of want people to be able to stay right there in that vicinity. So we'll see how that one plays out. But my guess is with the, if this addition occurs, there'll be not only the need, but there'll be people who will bring money to the table to do that.
I see where the study of parking and transportation just came out a week or two ago. I feel like something that mayors talk about a lot, parking, parking. I assume just the growing downtown precipitated the need for this study. Just kind of in brief terms, what did that study find?
Basically that we still have quite a bit of parking downtown with our two parking garages and with street parking within a couple of blocks of Wabash Avenue, which is the main street downtown. Even during the busy times, there is parking. Now, there's a couple of projects that are underway. Indiana State University's housing project that's going to bring almost 300 students to live right on Wabash. And then Core Development purchased the old Deming Hotel from the Housing Authority, and they're going to put 111 apartments in there. So between now and the end of the year, we're going to bring some more people, probably at least 400 to 500, living right within a block of Wabash Avenue that will have an impact on that. Yes, there's still room for them in the parking garages and on some street parking, but the Holman Center project would have an impact on that and any other development that occurs downtown. So that this gives us a baseline for now. We'll measure it again in a year when we get these two new things open, see what the impact of that is, and then we'll begin to do our longer range planning about how do we deal with what comes next.
Does anything change in terms of space needed or paid parking, free parking? Any changes, major changes you see coming up?
Not yet. I mean, I really think we need to wait for another year to see what the impact of these two housing projects are downtown. You know, there isn't a lot of vacant land. You know, most of the buildings are occupied. There's only a couple of empty buildings downtown in the whole stretch. So that'll be something that we'll have to work with some private entities to see, one, are they going to be doing any expansion of what they currently own, or is the city going to have to get involved with purchasing, you know, acquiring some property, working with ISU to bring the idea back about another parking garage on the west end of their campus. All those things will be on the table over the coming years.
It's always kind of what comes first. Do you bring the more parking in, or does that bring in merchants, or do the merchants come in and then you react to that? I mean, it's you know, kind of a...
Well, and it all depends what hat you're wearing, I guess, and who you talk to, because in my opinion, it's better to have to deal with the problem. If you go build parking garages, no business comes downtown, then what's the value of that? On the other hand, if people, and what we're seeing is growth of downtown, we're going to have to do some reaction to that. Because that's just, we can't just speculate on a third parking garage as an example and then hope somebody shows up, you know, because we've got two that were, one was built many years ago, one was built just in the last 6-7 years, and both of them are only about 50% capacity. So we've still got a lot of room to grow with existing facilities.
Do you struggle at all with employee parking versus public customer parking?
Well, it all depends, once again, which business you're talking about. If they have a lot of employees, it's a little bit more difficult for them to find a place that's close. But for some of them, you know, the more local businesses that are downtown, restaurants and some retail shops where they only have a handful of employees, we're not hearing as much of a complaint. They want to make sure their customers have a place to park. That's the key. And so we're working with Downtown Terre Haute to educate and to help get them to look at other options too and work with us.
Last time we talked, the Powerdyne contract was being rewritten. Is that still happening or anything new on that?
Still underway. This Thursday, in a couple of days here, we are going to be having a public meeting. The council had asked for some Powerdyne representatives to come, and there'll be some other people technically related to this project that'll come to answer questions for them. But we continue to work on the contract, so I really don't have any update on that at this time.
Has any money changed hands either way?
No.
Yeah.
No. Not yet. Well, we need to get the contracts resolved before we take the next steps.
So in the meantime, where's the sludge going? Is it still being shipped to Kokomo, or?
Well, we're able to store it. You know, with our upgrade to our plant, we've got a lot of storage capability, and we're bringing those things online, and so we just continue to store it.
And then what about, I read a report about their sludge coming in as well.
There's some from the smaller communities that surround us, but you know, it's a couple of trucks a year in most cases, and no, we've been doing some of those cities for several years now.
I wanted to ask about some of the trees downtown too. We've talked about the emerald ash borer making an appearance finally. The Terre Haute, this is something that we've seen throughout the state. Mm-hmm. Is it really making starting to make a bigger impact here as well?
We're starting to see an impact. You know, we've got quite a few ash trees or several downtown. There's some pretty significant stretches where it's all ash trees. And so we've treated some of those that we believe are in good health, that we're not, did not have a problem yet, and are in key places, but you can't treat all of them. It's very, very expensive to do that, and some of the trees are probably gonna have to come out this year, kind of on the midsection in the 15th, 16th Street of Wabash Avenue near Gilbert Park. There's some that are about half dead that we'll have to deal with this year. There's some others on Fifth Street that we kinda have run into a little bit of an issue with utility company coming in and doing some work and having to cut a couple of small roots. My guess is that emerald ash borer will kill those trees before the root problem does, but we'll have to deal with those. And plus, we've got a whole bunch of maple trees that are reaching that 75 to 80 year old level, and the insides of them are rotting out. So over the next few years, you're gonna see quite a few trees coming out because they're becoming safety hazards, either because of the emerald ash borer or because of trees just reaching the end of their life. So our goal is to always put two trees back in for every one we take out. We've not been able to quite get to that level yet, but we definitely are on a 1-to-1 ratio, and we'll continue to build that up to a 2-to-1 ratio.
And then you mentioned there's been somewhat of a misconception, though, with some of those trees, I forget on what street, in terms of them being removed. It's not primarily due to construction on that
street. Yeah, the ones on Fifth Street. It was, you know, Vectren doing their work in there, and there's been a little bit of a pushback from some folks because they're disappointed anytime we have to take any trees out. But these are ones that are already being affected by the emerald ash borer or will be at any time. And we're not gonna be able to save all of those particular trees anyway. A lot of the other ones have been treated, they should be fine. So we'll just let these trees take their course. If they last 3 or 4 or 5 years, that's great. If they become a safety hazard, we'll take them out.
I wanted your take too on the Duke Energy power line situation. I believe that they're going to court. There's been some controversy about, about the power lines, but yet it's part of legislation.
You know, that's across the river in West Terre Haute. It has to do with their power plant and their transmission lines being older. They need an alternative, a backup to that, because they're major transmission lines. And you know, you get into the legislation, you get into right-of-way kind of issues. You know, we run into things ourselves with railroads and utilities both when it comes to right-of-way, of whether things are properly documented or not, how people read the legislation, does the legislation need to be updated? I think that's kind of what they're going through, because anytime you have opposition to that, they try to find gray areas to be able to discuss and bring out to keep things from like that from happening or slow it down. And I think that's what's going on right now. Duke Energy feels like they're in a good, they are in good standing. The homeowners of those properties feel like they're in pretty good standing. So you kind of have that face off of about, will there need to be additional cleanup of any legislation? That I don't know. Will they get this resolved and everybody's happy? Probably not, but at some point it's gonna have to move on. And that's what we're kind of all waiting on, just looking to see what is the final resolution.
And then I had to ask you about the crows, because we're now seeing that in Bloomington. And now I'm actually experiencing it myself. And we've talked about that the past couple years. Is that still a problem here in Terre Haute?
You know, it's still a problem, but not nearly like it was 4 or 5 years ago. You know, we had somewhere, the flocks were estimated to be, some were 60 to 75,000. We had others telling us it was 70 to 90,000. We're probably down in the 10 to 15,000 that come into the city each night, maybe a few more in some little pockets. But in the downtown area, it's night or day difference from years ago. And as you can see down there yourself, they create a horrible mess. People are having to be out every single day to clean it up. There's always issues about health concerns. And even though we don't believe there's a lot of health concerns with it, it's just nasty and disgusting, and it doesn't create a good image. And so We've got a few trees, individual single trees downtown that a flock of about 15 or 20 crows land on at night. That's really our biggest impact. Some rooftops, but we've been able to put a huge dent in that here locally. And I shouldn't say Kokomo. I know there were some other communities that talked about it, but Bloomington was the most recent one we heard about. And they're going to have to put a plan in place, and it's probably going to take a few years to really get them to be redirected, just like it was for us. But you kind of need to get started on it now, because crows are very smart. They are very territorial. They know, and when they have broods, then those crows know where, you know, mom and dad went. And it's just really an amazing thing to watch. I've learned a lot about them, didn't know much at all, and they are very intelligent birds.
And then when you said, though, that you were able to put a dent into it, and if I remember, I think it was fireworks. I mean,
well,
there was all kinds
of things. Yeah. You know, some of the businesses downtown have cannons. We've got cannons we've placed mainly to keep them from even coming into the downtown area, but there are some downtown, the big blow up things you might see like in front of a car lot, you know, those things work. Raptor recordings work, but you have to move it. You'd use the same schedule, because these birds are very smart. They know it's fake after a while. So fireworks are a big part of that. What we're trying to do is redirect them to areas where it's safe for them. And so one of the areas is over here near about 10th and 11th and Poplar, along the railroad tracks. There's a big section of trees through there right next to the railroad, and it doesn't affect anybody. And so thousands of them congregate there at night, and they feel safe, they're fine, they're not bothering anybody downtown. So that's what we've tried to do, is redirect them to safe areas.